This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
I spent most of my adult life doing this band, and I've spent most of that time feeling like it's all about to wrap up and fuck, I'm just going to have to go and get a real job. And like, holy shit, isn't that like just the most unbearable thought? I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, holy fuck, what am I going to do? This is a disaster. Like, I can't do that. And so I think it probably has been like a slightly motivating factor in just doing heaps of stuff.
Welcome to Midnight Chats. Good evening, folks. Good to have you with us tonight. This is the music interview podcast for late night listening. I'm Greg and I'm here with Stu. How are you doing, Stu?
I'm good, thanks, mate. Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You're serving up a hot and sizzling podcast for us tonight.
Oh.
Aren't you? You've been in the kitchen.
Yeah, I suppose it is quite a hot and sizzling episode. This week on the podcast is King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard main man, front man, main guitarist, main songwriter, Stuart McKenzie. Another
King
Stuart.
King in chief.
Yeah, exactly. The king of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Of all of the famous major music stars that you've now met called Stuart, was this your favourite Stuart?
I don't like to talk ill of the Stuarts because there aren't many of us out there. But there's only been one other Stuart on the podcast.
Yeah.
And that is Stuart Braithwaite
from Mogwai.
Of Mogwai. Mm. Myself, of course, Stuart Stubbs, and now Stuart McKenzie. Who's the best, Mogwai or King Gizzard, Stuart? I'm going to go. I can't say.
Cop out.
I am copping out.
I mean, this is a great chat. I love King Gizzard. They have a reputation for being one of the world's best live bands for good reason. Such an incredible band. So I was really excited to hear Stu talk about the band. I don't feel like he talks about the band that often, certainly not on podcasts. So this conversation went in some like really interesting directions.
Yeah, this is very much one for fans of the band, I think, because we get into the music, and that is because there's so much of it. If you are unfamiliar with King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, I mean, I'm saying the whole name every time, by the way, Greg. If you're unfamiliar, they are a psychedelic rock band from Melbourne in Australia, and they have released 25 albums over the last 11 years. The prolific nature of this group is their thing. We talk about it a lot on this podcast. So obviously there's a lot of music to get into, but here's what I love about this band. It's not just that they make so many albums. It's how considered each of those records are. Let me throw some things at you here, Greg. Cool, because every record they do sort of has a experiment at the middle of it. So their album from 2016 called Nonagon Infinity was an album that played on a loop. Paper Mache Dream Balloon, they've got good titles as well. 2015, that was made exclusively with acoustic instruments. Flying Microtonal Banana.
Are you making these up? The funny thing is you're not.
I'm not, yeah. That is a microtonal album. I'm still not really sure what microtonal is, to be honest. They've got a jazz album called Sketches of Brunswick Heats. There's always something, is what I'm getting at. There's always, it's not just they're like dropping out these albums that all sound the same. They've all been very considered. They've all got very different things going on. And their current record, at least at the time of recording, and there's a very good chance a new King Gizzard record will be out by the time you're listening to this, is called The Silver Chord. And that one has been made purely with synthesizers. This is a rock band, you know, very much a guitar rock band. And this new record, they've put down all the guitars. There's no guitars on it. And it's their electronic synthesizer record. And I just like that they challenged themselves in that way. And as I say, like, there was just a lot to get into. So there's a lot of music talk in this episode.
Let us know what you think of the episode. We are Midnight Chats Pod on the social platforms, on TikTok, on Instagram. You'll be able to watch some video clips of Stu chatting to Stu as well. So do go and check those out.
Just one thing I wanted to say on that, Greg, actually, on the socials, just a socials update, because we are new to it here on the show. Mate, we are doing some numbers, especially on TikTok, which I'm brand new to. I know you are as well, but I feel it's our calling. Check this out. 36 people we're following. That one doesn't really count because we've chosen that. Followers, 7. likes, 82. So, oh, pretty viral stuff going on over there. If you're listening, if you're listening as a TikTok person, get involved.
Exactly. Even if it's out of sympathy.
For now, though, here is Stuart McKenzie, one of the best Stuarts we've ever had on the show. I mean, do you get completely bored of the sort of thing that people want to talk to you about is just how many records you make and how prolific you are?
Oh, no, it's like it's always very flattering to hear that people notice that shit, to be honest. And yeah, I mean, I'm happy to talk about it. It's like kind of what I've spent my whole life doing, my whole adult life doing, really. It's just mostly that thing. It's just like touring and making records and trying to keep the rest of my life on track in the in-between moments.
It is so unique. There's a few doing it, I guess, like John Dwyer and the OCs, who I'm guessing you know quite well, having released on Castleface. Were you always a fan? Have you always been a fan of artists who have that huge back catalogue? Was that something that you wanted for yourself? Like, we want to be a band that makes a lot of records and has this sort of catalog that people can just live in forever.
I think with, firstly, shout out to John Dwyer, who definitely did support us in like such a massive way. One of the first people outside of Australia to get behind our music in any way. But yeah, we didn't have too much of a sort of mission statement, I suppose, when we started the band. I mean, it was none of our first bands, and I think we definitely wanted to do a different thing to any of the bands that we were currently in. King Giz was definitely an experiment right from the beginning, and it was sort of like, what would happen if we did this, you know, or what would happen if we did this? And one of the very few things that we did say and think about early was, let's try and make a lot of records. And I think the place that it came from was trying to drop any ego, easier said than done, not be too precious about your songwriting, easier said than done, and just learn on the go. Because I had realized that, at least for myself, until I actually had put down a recording, and this kind of went for all the things I was doing before King Gizz, I couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, I would work on a song and I'd be working on it late at night in my bedroom, which was typically how I recorded at that point. And it just would be swirling around in my head until I put it on the internet, or I burnt it to a CD, which is what you did in the olden days, and put it in my car, or I'd just done something to put a bow on it. I was pretty content on putting bows on things and just finishing them and just being able to kind of move on and think about how to write songs and learn how to write songs and just do it in public, I suppose.
And it's so rare, isn't it, to like find a group of people willing to go with that. As you say, like it wasn't your first bands and you sort of wanted, but you guys started very young, didn't you? Were you still in high school when you started?
Ambrose was the only one still in high school when Gizzard started. He might have just been 18, maybe he was 17 still, but Joe's maybe 4 years older than Ambrose. So yeah, we started between, let's say, 18 and 22.
You went to school in Geelong, right?
I did go to high school in Geelong. I went to high school with Cookie. But I also played, I played in a band with Cookie in high school. But I also played in a band with Lucas in high school, who also went to school in Geelong, but at a different school.
What were those bands like?
The band that I played in with Cookie was called Revolver and Son, and we were doing authentic to the point of literally being teenagers garage rock thing, like a 60s garage rock thing, to the point of like, you know, wearing paisley button up shirts and cowboy boots and playing with no distortion on our guitars and stuff like that.
Okay,
like,
yeah. That jangly psychedelic, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, that sort of thing. So yeah, Cookie and I played in that band together. And then, yeah, I also played in a band with Lucas, which was, I suppose you would say, more indie, but was definitely still like a rock band format, more indie and probably more psychedelically tinged, a lot more sort of like bigger sounds and effects and spatial kind of things. And that band was called The Houses. The Cavs drummer for King Gizzard, he joined The Houses later, and I reckon that was my first year of uni, and I met Cavs through Eric, who was part of the band until a few years ago. Eric and I went to uni together with Joe as well, and Ambrose played in a band with Lucas at the same time that I played in a band with Lucas, and that was called Sambros Automobile. So we actually are all connected deeply to like our very earlier years. And we were all living in share houses. Like most of us, maybe everybody at one point lived in these two share houses, which were like on a corner in Carlton, which is in Melbourne. So, and that was before the band started. So all the bands were kind of playing shows together and going to shows and going to parties. And King Gizzard was a collective of people who wanted to be in the experimental band, I think. And the lineup included a lot more people in the earlier years, probably for like a 2-year period. It was a fluid membership. There technically wasn't members of the band, I would say. But over the years, most people decided it was like either boring or annoying to be in the band and bailed. So we sort of just were naturally solidified into the kind of the group.
We also had Amy Taylor on the podcast last year. So, we were talking a bit about like the Melbourne scene. She was talking about how Amel and the Sniffers started out purely to just play their friends' yard party. Like that was it. That was like the intention.
We were the same like that too. Same.
Yeah, I'm starting to think maybe that's like a typically like sort of Melbourne thing, because where you are, there is like a culture of house parties where bands turn up, right? And people play their mates' house parties.
I do feel like less kind of connected to the visceral sort of like house party thing these days. But I definitely can say that, yeah, fuck, 15 years ago or whatever, when I started doing that sort of thing, yeah, it just was what it was. Like most house parties we went to, someone played some form of like live music, and it was really dope and normal and like fun. One thing that I didn't realize at the time, and kind of after traveling a lot and seeing a lot of sort of like music cities, I realized it's maybe a little unusual and cool about Melbourne, is most of the like music industry is in Sydney, in Australia, but Melbourne has the majority of the venues and the shows and the bands and the artists, like by a by a good stretch. And it does definitely create a different atmosphere because no one's like, we weren't even thinking about, we had no idea how anything worked. Like, we weren't thinking about how we would get to the next stage or any form of strategy or anything. Like, we were just playing shows because like it felt good. And like, we enjoyed playing music together in the sort of like wholesome old fashioned sort of way. It is a beautiful thing about Melbourne, and it may change, but I secretly hope it doesn't.
In terms of these 25 albums that you've currently made, do you spend much time looking back at the old ones, or when they're gone, are they gone? Because I was also thinking, how do you sort of even remember them once you're getting into the 20s? Like, oh yeah, we made that record, didn't we?
I think I could still very easily name them all. I think I might struggle to rattle off track lists, maybe. Maybe that's where it starts, the memory starts getting hazy. I think maybe at 10 records, it was still pretty easy to like do that.
Well, I'm glad you've said this, Stu, because I had an idea of something we could do.
Please don't make me do that.
this is not going to be a test.
Yep.
As we've already established, I think it's incredible that you've made so many albums in such a short period of time. But what I think really makes it the next level is that each of those albums has got a very different experiment within it. It's not like you've made 25 albums of the same album, like far, far from it. I thought maybe if you're up for this, if I could just name a couple and you could just tell me what your sort of instinctive memory of that record is.
And, okay, let's do it.
And tell me the thing that...
The first thing that comes up.
The first thing that comes up, essentially.
I love
it. I've just got a few here. Okay, Nonagon Infinity.
This was very much inspired by playing a lot of shows. When we really started to tour internationally was kind of 2014. And that's really when the seeds of Nonagon were set. We were trying to do this thing in the shows at that point around 2014, where we wanted to start and not stop. And at this point, we weren't doing like long shows like we are now. They might have been, I don't know, 60 minutes felt like a very long show in those days. But we were trying to do this thing where we'd start and play the whole time, and every song would kind of like blend together and mash into each other. And, you know, we didn't want it to be like atmospheric and ethereal. We wanted it to just like be like freakishly intense and like just an absolute assault of like all of your senses.
I saw you on that tour and it was that.
That's a really good
description. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, it was that.
It probably did take us like 18 months of touring to kind of figure out what was going to work in that way. And in fact, we did, we started recording it. We made a good dint on it. We actually thought we'd recorded all of it, and we got to the end and we realized that it wasn't done. And so we took a break and we made Paper Mache Dream Balloon. And that was like this incredible palate cleanser, because it needed to be the opposite thing to Nonagon. It couldn't compete with any of those ideas.
We should just say to people that maybe don't know, Nonagon Infinity is the record that plays infinitely. It's a loop, isn't it? That record's like a loop that sort of...
It is a loop.
Comes back round. And then the following, Paper Mache Dream Balloon, is the record that you made completely using acoustic instruments.
Correct. Yeah, and so Nonagon has this sort of like intense atmosphere, and everything is just on max and sped up, and there's no downtime, and it's just like press play and just go. And we were trying to do that, which did actually prove to be harder than we thought, to just insert no breathing space into, you know, 9 songs in a row and make them work and make sense back to back. So yeah, I don't know. I could go on forever.
I mean, it sounds like you know this a lot better than I certainly would, like this many albums in. Okay, here's another one.
Yeah, let's go.
More recent, Infest the Rat's Nest.
Okay. I remember it being insanely hot. It was kind of, we did the main tracking in the middle of summer, and we're in our old studio at this point. It was probably one of the last things we did there. And no AC. in there. I think we actually got AC right after this session because we were just like, holy fuck, this is like actually dumb. Like this is like, we're going to like die or something. Someone's going to get the heat stroke in here. Cause it's like illegally low ceiling and just like a very, very small compact box that was also like never vacuumed or anything and just was like dusty and just like disgusting and Australia, middle of Australian summer. But anyway, we had talked about making a metal record for years. And I think when we made Nonagon, actually going back to that, at that time, that actually felt like us doing a metal thing. And in hindsight, it wasn't really, but that was us leaning into that, but still sort of playing 12 string guitars with like, you know, like, I don't know, vintage fuzz pedals and shit, you know, like it was a different thing. And then Murder of the Universe felt a little heavier again. And then I think after that, we sort of lent into some sort of more metal leaning things. You know, Murder of the Universe has like Vomit Coffin, which maybe feels heavier. And then on Gumboot Soup, there's like Great Chain of Being, which sort of feels sludgy. And maybe you could actually call that metal, maybe. And I think we were trying to find this like this niche that kind of made sense to us.
Shout out to Vomit Coffin, by the way. I mean, I can't let you just drop that in without a note, without recognizing the track title alone. I mean, you know, come on.
Well, the track title actually has a backstory as well. The backstory to the track title is my little brother Lockie and a few of his friends, including my cousin Tom McKenzie and a bunch of other people. I actually can't remember the exact lineup, but it was just a lot of people that were around our family house when we were young, like early teenage years, I'd say. They had a band that would rehearse in the garage, in the parents' garage. And it was like a parody metal band. And I think they were quietly taking the piss out of me and my friends and the bands that we were playing in. But yeah, it was like a parody, sort of like they were taking the piss out of everything and just that actually were having an amazingly beautiful, awesome time as well.
How much younger than you is your brother?
2 years.
Yeah,
two
years. I'm the younger by 2 years. And this is the sort of thing that I would do to annoy my brother.
But anyway, their band was called Vomit Coffin.
And, great.
And I'll like never forget that because it was just so perfect. It's like, this is amazing. I'm going to use that in something one day. And so, yeah, one day it made sense.
It finally made it in 2019. With that record, did you get any sort of idea of how sort of metal fans like took it? Because, you know, like all sort of really dedicated fan groups, they probably would have had a thought on this other band who are not traditionally a metal band suddenly trying to make a metal record.
Honestly, I have learned to try not to dig into that shit very much. But I definitely have noticed more black t-shirts with like metal band logos on them at shows. So that's a sign, I think. I think for me, like I've always tried to approach every record as if it's our first album. And that's the kind of way I'd like. Obviously, no one's ever going to think of it like that besides me, but that's the way in my mind I would like people to perceive each record. And if they don't, like, it's totally fine, but it helps me to have the sort of, I just remember like being in a band and making your first record and how it doesn't matter. And it's like, or maybe it does for some people, but when you sort of in your earliest band and a good crowd is like six of your mates in the back shed, like you don't really that concerned about what, connoisseurs of the genre are going to think about your album. Like I've tried to keep that sort of like mindset as much as I can. Again, easier said than done, but like something that I would try to check myself on, I think.
One last one that I wanted to just pick out was Polygon Wonderland. Am I saying that incorrectly?
It doesn't matter. It's not a real word. You say it however you want.
Is it not a real word? Okay. Polygon Wonderland. I'm going to go with that. we released this one on a tape.
Oh, I'm mad. Thank you.
That we put out, and we just, like, you know, raised a little bit of money for a charity. I think it was a refugee charity that we did. Oh. This came out in 2017.
Good on you. Thank you.
This was the record that you'd made, and you just put out, didn't you? You sort of encouraged people to, like, release it, put it wherever you want. If you want to put it on your record label, put it on your record label. If you want to do a tape, do a tape. If you want to, you know, just share it around. What was the thinking behind that?
To put my mind back in that place, that was 2017. We did 5 records that year, which was
insane.
Very insane. Yeah. It was, like, very fun though, and definitely learnt a lot over that time. We had started, like, a lot of these songs, and we'd recorded, like, a decent amount of material in 2016 too. As I think there's probably some stuff recorded for that year in 2015 as well. And they were all were sketched out by at least early 2016. So it's cool. Like, we didn't make 5 records and release all of them within 12 months. We just released them in 12 months. But as we started to, like, release all these records, I did start to feel uncomfortable about asking people for money or asking people to buy shit constantly. It's just not why we do it. Like, truly, it's really not why we do it. And I just would never want that to feel like the motivation. I think it would just instantly crush the whole project. And I was feeling extremely grateful that we were playing shows and people were coming, and I just thought, I don't know, like, I think everyone's doing enough. Like, we're already selling 4 albums. So it made sense to make the free one, Polygon Dwindland. And it was the obvious thing to do, a free one. Polygon Dwindland was the one we chose because out of the 5 we were doing that year, it was the one that felt, like, I know I keep saying this word consider, but it's the only word I can think of using. It's the word I've used to describe that record since the very start. But I think it's because it's less haphazard, and it's much more slow brushstrokes and kind of just thinking about the whole puzzle before we started. I think we thought in our heads it would actually be more stripped back than it ended up, but I think we realized that you can add more layers than you think while still hearing each one and making sure they're still serving a function. But anyway, we started talking about doing this thing free, and basically everyone we work with, which wasn't many people at that point and still isn't a huge amount of people, but everyone was like, oh, can you just do, like, Bandcamp, like, pay what you want? Or why don't you do, you know, why don't we just press, like, you know, like, 1,000 copies and then maybe, like, make it a free download? Or why don't you just do this or that? And I was like, no, like, it's free. Like, how free can we make this? You know, it's, like, literally free. Like, it's not mine. It's not ours. It belongs to the universe. It belongs to the world. And so it was sort of like an experiment in how truly free can you make something? And surprisingly hard, and, like, surprising amount of hurdles to do that thing. But we tried our best, and it sort of inspired this whole bootleg thing that we've been doing.
Have you seen any copies that people put out or put together, like, out and about on tour or ever? Have you come across the record in these different ways that people have distributed it?
I've seen so many. Like, I would have seen at least 100 different ones, like maybe 200 different versions of Polygon Dwindland. Occasionally I will check Discogs and see how many it's gotten up to, but it's like several hundred logged separate variants from different labels.
Yeah, we need to log ours. I don't think we've logged ours on Discog. I'm going to do that tomorrow.
Yeah, do it and take a deep dive of, like, some of the crazy shit that people have made. It's like, I really can't get my head around it that we actually made that record, because it truly just doesn't feel like ours. And I have all these, like, really beautiful and strong memories of making the record, but as soon as that was done, it just kind of feels like something that's always existed. you know. So yeah, it's like one of my favorite things we've ever done. I feel very like, it felt like a experiment gone right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
We should talk about the silver cord because, you know, that's about to come out. We've skipped a whole bunch of records here, but we'd be here all day. So this, I mean, once again, with this record, you've tried something completely new, like set yourself a new challenge. This is like an electronic record. You've put down the guitars. I've listened to it. I've listened to both versions of it, which I was going to ask you about as well, but I couldn't hear any guitars, but I know that maybe there's some hidden in there that are sounding like synths. Or is it just you guys are playing synthesizers at electronic drum kit, and that is every sound that's coming out of this record?
Yeah, that's it. There's no sort of guitars or do we say acoustic drum kits? You know, drum kits. When people think about drum kits, there's none of those. There's none of those in there.
Where did this idea come from? Because, you know, every record that you've made has had this very unique sort of heart to it of we're going to make a jazz record, we're going to make a microtonal record, an acoustic instrument only record, a metal record.
I suppose like the few kind of like things that converged into leading us here was we did want to do an opposing forces to albums kind of thing this year, which was something that we had talked about for a while of doing something like that again. And with Petro Dragonic and with Silver Chord, they were like worked on at the same time. So we did want to make sure that they didn't interfere with each other, but there are actually a lot of kind of links between them that felt important when we were making them, and maybe like it's more kind of birthed from the same womb but become sort of two different sort of creatures in the end. And we were very keen to do like another metal leaning record. So we wanted to make sure we were doing something else that was not that. But I think thinking about Butterfly 3000, which when we made that record, that was the most electronic thing that we'd done at that time. But that was made during COVID, and it was mostly, I mean, it was almost entirely made without being in the same room as another person really at all. And so we kind of lent into that with that record, and everything is just overdubbed and, you know, laid one thing at a time and sending files around to each other and just kind of leaning into that as a vibe. And it was for us at that time very electronic. But, you know, because of the way that it was constructed, when we got together and tried to figure out how to play these songs, it was just like a fucking nightmare. It was so, what's the opposite of intuitive? Whatever that is what it was. It was just, counterintuitive. Maybe not even that doesn't quite feel right either. But, and I feel like I've got a fair amount of discipline in my life in certain areas, but when it comes to rehearsal, I'm hopeless. Like I just hate it. I just can't wait for it to be over. And so with Butterfly, unfortunately, it felt like a bit of a casualty, you know, like Butterfly Live, maybe. It just felt like in order for us to just move on and just like make the next record and just like not spend all of our time like thinking about this synth arpeggiator in 13.8, like we need to just like put this to bed. So that was just, that kind of hurt, you know, a little bit, and sort of maybe didn't feel like we'd done that album justice. And I do feel like we do need to spend some time on it and go back there. And I think, well, I know eventually we will. I don't know how long that's going to take, but eventually we will play a lot more of those songs live. But anyway, since then, it's just been a nagging feeling to make something that's electronic leaning, but also just made live, like made by us in a room.
Did you all have synth skills? Was everybody turning up like, actually, you know, I know I'm the bassist, but I'm actually very good on keys? Or were you all figuring that out?
We've like everyone in the band plays keys, at least a bit. Actually, Lucas is probably the best piano player, and he's a bassist. So you know, it's sort of, yeah, everyone in the band's a multi instrumentalist in their own way. So that helps to at least kind of have the architecture of the notes sort of like working. But none of us are shredders in that way at all, and that's not what this record is. But the way I wanted to approach it this time was for it to feel like to us as much like it does at a show when we're improvising. Like we're in that space, which is much more of the show now than it used to be, where it's just completely spontaneous and we don't know where we're going and we're just making music on the spot. And that was the way the record was made. So we tried to find that same niche. And I think I did say this in the press release, but we were talking about playing our instruments like they were guitars and like they were drum kits. And you know, Lucas, for instance, who's the bass player in Gizzard, he played the bass like keys, like he played the bass synth. You know, he's still in that space. And I think the way it came together was when it worked, and it did take us several days of like making music together in this way before we made anything that felt like we should keep it. When it worked, it was us in those same niches that we are on stage and that we know well, and we're kind of listening to each other and feeling it in the same way as we are on stage without guitars that we know how to play and we feel comfy on.
And there are two mixes of it. There's like a 28-minute version and there's a 1 hour 28-minute version.
Yeah, and that was not something that was initially planned. One thing we were thinking about when we were recording was we wanted to find those moments that I suppose we call endless boogies, but those moments where you feel like you're just in it and you could kind of play the same thing over and over again and just be in it. Like it's very hard to kind of like write something like that. You just have to do it, you know? And sometimes have an idea or a riff or a chord progression or something that you are so sure is going to be an endless boogie. And until you play it with everyone, you realize that it's not. But anyway, we spent the whole recording session really trying to find those moments. And then when we were in them, to just live in them and be in them and, like, you know, occupy that space. And so that was sort of like, I guess, that nugget of what we were trying to come back to when we were recording. But, you know, I still wanted to experiment. Well, experiment sounds like a funny way to put it, but experiment with, like, traditional song structure too. And it became pretty obvious, like, even when we're recording, that we should make two albums here. Like, this is a, we should still do this kind of, like, quite condensed, everything to the point, no meat sort of version of the album. And then, like, let's like occupy that space and let's do, like, a longer version where we just let this ride and, like, be in it.
It's cool because they're very sort of different experiences whilst being the same song, like, sort of stretched out. And, like, the short version's sort of just, like, all the hooks crammed in, completely lean. And then the other one is something that you can sort of just completely get lost in.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
I think I probably know the answer to this now, having spoken to you.
Tell me.
Not that I want this to happen, I should say. I'm going to prefix it with that. But is there any sort of idea of how King Gizzard comes to an end? Because one, I've got an idea for you, but also because everything feels so sort of purposefully planned, you know? I know, like, there's a big element of the band that is improvisational and you're seeing where it goes, and where you are now is, I can't imagine you imagined that would ever be the case when you started 10 years ago. But because all of, like, the records are so sort of thought out, I feel like when it ends, whenever that is, 100 years time, whenever it is, like, there needs to be, I can't imagine you being a band basically that just sort of go, oh, you know, that record, like, okay, that's going to be the last one.
Hard to answer the question, truly. Mm. I think I want to say the earlier years, but honestly, like, I still sort of feel like this. I do feel like this when I search my soul. I feel like, I spent most of my adult life doing this band, and I've spent most of that time feeling like it's all about to wrap up and fuck, I'm just going to have to go and get a real job. And like, holy shit, isn't that like just the most unbearable thought? I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, holy fuck, what am I going to do? This is a disaster. Like, I can't do that. And so I think it probably has been like a slightly motivating factor in just doing heaps of stuff while it feels like it's working. And so in that way, I feel very extremely grateful that I'm able to do it, and like people turn up to shows and like buy our stuff. That's just allows us to do this, you know, full time, which is, I just feel extremely grateful for. I know a lot of people would kill to have that opportunity. So, I guess what I'm saying is that, I feel like if people are coming and if people are taking interest in what we do, I'm pretty sure we're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
I think. I'm not really 100% sure about that, but and I might not have said that a few years ago, but it's starting to feel like something that will just continue until something causes it to stop, you know. But it's feeling like that thing probably won't be me, you know. I'm not really sure about that, but that's where I'm at right now.
Because my idea is, let's say you get to 100, you make 100 albums, which, let's face it, might be 5 years away at this rate. In fact, you then play, you do 100 nights somewhere, and you play an album a night for 100 straight nights. And then that's...
And then I jump off a 12-story building.
Yeah, let's not think about the end right now. One final question for you is, how long do I have to get this podcast up before the silver cord, which is still a week away at the point of recording, is no longer the album you're promoting and the most recent King Gizzard record?
I truly don't know the answer to that question.
So I've got a bit of time. I don't need to rush.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine. I think you'll be fine, yeah.
Midnight Chats is a joint production between Loud and Quiet and Atomized Studios for iHeartRadio.
It's hosted by Stuart Stubbs and Greg Cochran, mixed and mastered by Flo Lines, and edited by Stuart Stubbs.
Find us on Instagram and TikTok to watch clips from our recordings and much, much more. We are Midnight Chats Pod.
For more information, visit loudandquiet.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.